or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Among the presidential campaign's top issues is jobs. Of course, the president has less power over jobs than many people may think, but presidents certainly do matter. Who would be better on jobs, Barack Obama or Mitt Romney? More specifically, who would do a wiser job of helping America compete for jobs in the global economy while providing humane protections? Who would do a better job of going beyond soundbites like education is the answer when the U.S. is already at the top of the world heap in per capita spending on education? Would a more free market or a more regulated environment ultimately be wiser for employees, employers, and the larger economy? Would more Keynesian kickstarting spending be better for the economy? Or would it be better to leave more money in people's pockets? Would more quantitative easing be wiser ultimately for creating jobs or worse? Those are some of the questions. We may not even get to all of those questions, but certainly there are a lot of job-related questions that are core to who you should vote for. And so, to try to shed a little light on the subject, we're going to have a debate this morning on that question of who overall would be better on jobs, President Obama or Governor Romney. So I'm arguing that President Obama would be better is San Francisco supervisor and mayoral candidate David Chu. David holds a bachelor's degree in government, a master's in public policy, and a law degree all from Harvard. Welcome to you, David.
Thanks for having me this morning.
And arguing that Governor Romney would be better on jobs is Bill Bowen. He's a member of the San Francisco GOP's Central Committee. He holds a bachelor's of science from the U.S. Air Force Academy and a master's in political science from Georgetown. Welcome to you as well, Bill.
Thank you.
Well, we're going to start by asking each of you to take 2 minutes to make the case that your candidate would be better on jobs. And that opening statement should, as I implied earlier, address both questions. Who would be better at literally creating jobs, and whose approach would be better in the workplace? Regulations, worker protections, employer mandates, and so on. You might want to address not just what's best for employees or what's best for employers, but also what's best for the overall society. Then, after those opening statements, the two of you are going to have a free-form discussion for roughly 10 minutes that'll springboard off your opening statements. And I ask only that you monitor yourself so that each of you roughly gets equal time. Don't play the games like they did in the presidential debates where they interrupted so they maximize the amount of time they get. That's not only unseemly, but it's not fair. I think listeners, if I myself think that listeners would benefit from a change of voice or a refocusing of the discussion, I will intervene. But ideally, the two of you would self-regulate and really feel like we want to pack that 10 minutes or so with a nice, brief, feisty exchange on the merits of all of those issues. And we'll end by each of you making a 90-second closing statement. Ideally, your closing statements will not be a mere reiteration of your opening statement, but a sharpening of the core distinctions and perhaps commonalities, we can be statesmanlike about this, between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. My goal is simply that at the end, the listeners will have felt they heard an intelligent, respectful exchange that was enlightening. Now, who would like to go first? The first person who's going to make the opening statement is going to be the person who goes last in the closing. Either you guys have a preference?
Either way, I'd go.
Either way. Yeah. So why don't I say, okay, since you came here first, Bill, why don't you go first? I'll set this, you'll watch your own timer here. I'm going to set it for, you know, I don't want to bumper, well, I guess I will. So we've got it set for 2 minutes, and please begin.
Okay, thank you very much, Marty, for inviting us here today. I'd also like to kind of begin by saying that we, the Republican Party in San Francisco, support Supervisor Chu, so there's not a great animosity between us and Supervisor Chu. The respect him as much as anything else for the civility that he's brought to the Board of Supervisors. It's not been the typical thing over the last decade or so in San Francisco, and I think it's very helpful and important for the city to have that level of civility. Also, I would kind of point to the moving to the national level, that things seem to have deteriorated of late in the area of civility. So kind of this, hopefully this will be kind of a call to return to civility in this discussion. This subject also is the most important in the election, in the polls of the voters. the economy and jobs, and it's one that consistently Mitt Romney is the higher-ranking candidate. So I kind of enjoy talking about this subject. I think of it in three sections, four sections, actually. One, there's a baseline of where we are, which we need to be sure that we understand where we are. One is the experience and record of the two candidates. One is the difference in policies. And the fourth is, as Marty has indicated, implications in the workplace. So just in a very short comment on where we are, I think would be commonly known that we've got 23 million people out of work or underemployed, and that is as bad as it's been. We've got the labor participation rate down to 63%, which is below what it's been since 30 years or more. We've got 1.2% GDP growth 4 years into recovery, which began in June of 2009. We have a lousy subset for any group of workers.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm sure you'll have more time to address a lot of these issues in the free-for-all discussion, if you will. So now, David Chu, you have 2 minutes. Please make your opening statement as to why you think President Obama is overall better on jobs.
Well, first of all, thanks for inviting us onto the show, and you really are pointing to the central question that is facing our country right now. And as someone who, as an elected official, have had as my top priority creating jobs, and as someone who used to run a small business, this is absolutely critical for our future. I think it's important for people to remember the context under which President Obama took office when we were hitting the bottom of the Great Recession after years of failed Republican economic policies. A few months after Wall Street collapsed in September 2008, America actually had lost more jobs in that first month that President Obama had taken office, more than 800,000 jobs than we had in any single month in the previous 60 years. President Obama took immediate action to address this crisis. He cut taxes for small businesses and middle-class families. He saved the jobs of tens of thousands of teachers, police officers, and firefighters with aides to state. He immediately invested in infrastructure. And 3 years later, it's clear that his Recovery Act helped to stop us from sliding into a second Great Depression, as even a John McCain advisor has admitted. As of today, the American economy has added 5.2 million private sector jobs over the last 31 consecutive months. He's done this by boosting domestic manufacturing, by rescuing the auto industry, by expanding American exports, cutting middle-class taxes. His policies are really focused on helping to create an economy that is built to last. And we all know the recession didn't happen overnight, so there's still work to be done. But we are seeing very real progress. And as I hope we'll have a chance to talk about, I think his ideas for the future make much more sense than Mitt Romney's.
Thank you very much, David Chu. And now I'd like to leave, 10 minutes for just I guess the metaphor I really like to use is that you guys are having a beer. And you're sitting and you're advocating for your positions, but you're also being friendly, like Bill was saying. 10 minutes of a brief little conversational exchange of ideas on that larger question, the full-dimensioned look at who's better overall, would be better on jobs, President Obama or Governor Romney. Obama, that would be an interesting amalgamation. In any case, please begin as you may.
There's lots of data, and it's probably going to be difficult to agree on data because you can pick a different starting point. The reality is that there are the number of jobs in the country is about what it was when President Obama took office. So there was a steep decline, and then there's been a moderate comeback, and we are currently growing at about 1.2% GDP, which is about enough to keep up with the growth of people in the job market. So we arrived at what I would kind of call a new normal. And the question is whether people accept that new normal as what's an appropriate thing for the American public.
I think one thing that's important to note is the president has moved forward really job proposals that have been blocked every step of the way by the Republicans in Congress and opposed by Mitt Romney. And I think it's important to know that what his successes thus far of boosting manufacturing, of rescuing the auto industry, of expanding American exports, and really cutting middle-class taxes have led to us pulling ourselves out of the tremendous hole that we were in just a few short years ago. From my perspective, I think the fact that Mr. Romney has really opposed every effort by the president with regards to jobs acts to keep police officers and teachers and construction workers on the job, opposing emergency loans that helped to rescue an American auto industry, which has saved a million jobs up and down the supply chain. In fact, Romney wanted to let Detroit go bankrupt. The fact that Mr. Romney has embraced a Republican budget plan, which would make steep cuts to most things across the board, including workforce training programs, except for allowing for massive tax cuts for the wealthiest of Americans and the wealthiest of corporations, is really the wrong way for us to go. We need to be focused on our middle class.
Yeah, there's an element of discussion of taxes, which could probably be a day-long discussion in and of itself. The governor, in his last debate performance, was very clear that the intent of his tax policies, and you really have to look at both the corporate tax policies and the individual tax policies, but clear that there is not to be a decrease in the percentage of the taxes paid by the upper class, the wealthier people, and there will be no increase in the deficit caused by his tax policies. So without having it all be about tax policy, I think you have to understand those parameters.
And let me just talk for a moment about President Obama's record on tax policies. He has cut middle-class taxes. In fact, federal taxes on middle-income Americans are near a historic low. The typical American family has seen their taxes cut by $3,600 over the past 4 years, thanks to President Obama. President Obama has been providing tax credits for working families to be able to afford health insurance, tax credits for college tuition. And in contrast, Mr. Romney believes that cutting taxes for those at the very top and helping to deregulate Wall Street and major polluters, he believes that that's going to unleash private sector growth. We tried that approach for the past 10 years. It led to the slowest job growth in decades. It led to rising income inequality.
Let me shift a little bit away from the data and taxes. President or Governor Romney has had two iterations of his economic plan. Currently, he's got a 5-point jobs plan that I can talk about in whatever level of detail people would like. It's at mittromney.com. There's a 59-point plan that he had last year, which was criticized for being too specific and too geeky. Now the 5-point plan is being criticized for being too vague and wanting more specificity. But there are five elements of the 5-point plan. One is energy independence, probably the easiest to draw a good distinction between the president and Governor Romney. One is education. One's expansion of global trade. One's to cap government spending back at the level that it used to be when it was about 20% of gross domestic product prior to President Obama. And the other is promotion of small business, which has a tax element and an Obamacare element.
Bill, why don't you take one of those and make what you think is the strongest position that Governor Romney has related to jobs, and then let's hear David respond to that, and then I'm going to reverse it and have Dave do the same thing.
Good. Probably energy is the one where there's the greatest distinction. The attitude of the administration has been reflected by Stephen Chu, the Secretary of Energy, who said what we have to figure out is how to get our gasoline prices up to the European levels. Well, he's about halfway there in 4 years. We have Solyndra and the decision of the administration to pick winners and losers in the energy development area, about $90 billion going into green energy opposition to coal and carbon-based energy, kind of reflected in the Keystone Pipeline action.
David? So I really appreciate you bringing that up, because I think there is a real difference between the president and Mr. Romney when it comes to energy policies. You know, what we're trying to do in California and what President Obama is trying to do is really focus on clean energies rather than giving massive tax breaks and deregulation of major regulators. President Obama wants to develop our vast natural resources and really lead the world in helping to create clean energy technologies that are job-creating, and that has never been more promising. He's pushing innovation in that area. He's committed to promoting natural gas production, which will hopefully be supporting over 500,000 new jobs in the near future. And he has a clean energy standard to help really spur investment and innovation by requiring that most of our nation's electricity, hopefully over the next few decades, come from clean resources. Now, the topic that I do want to bring up, because it was mentioned earlier,
I
think I like to do it that way. You made a core okay. point. He's now going to raise a key issue that he feels is at the linchpin, at the core of Obama's advantage on jobs, and then I'd like you to respond to that. David, go ahead, please.
So I think it's really important. Bill referred to shifting from the data and shifting from the facts. I want to focus back on the facts of Mitt Romney's record when it comes to job creation. He has a record of sending jobs overseas. If you look at his history with his corporate buyout firm, which invested in companies that were pioneers in outsourcing jobs. If you look at his record as Massachusetts governor, when he vetoed a bill that would have prevented Massachusetts from sending state jobs overseas. If you look at his record of job creation in his own state, under his leadership, the state of Massachusetts had the worst job creation record in the country, ranked 47th out of 50 states. Massachusetts, under his leadership, lost manufacturing jobs at twice the national average. It was the third worst record in the country. And as governor, he repeatedly cut funding for job training, and median household income in Massachusetts actually fell. That's what I'm concerned about.
Unemployment rate in Massachusetts when Mitt Romney was governor was 4.7%. I would like to know any governor in the country today that would not be elated to have a 4.7% unemployment rate. He did a number of things. He was very interested in education in Massachusetts. He did things with increased community colleges. He had introduced a program where he could have the top quarter of the graduates from public high schools get scholarships, state scholarships to state schools. Very good record there. Bain, when he was at Bain, they created tens of thousands of jobs. Staples is the largest individual, but there are 200 and something companies that Bain has dealt with. Over 90% of those that were involved in restructuring Midwest manufacturing Rust Belt companies were successful. So it is. There's few people that you could think of that know more about what it takes to put a job together than Mitt Romney.
We only have a minute and a half left in this freeform part. Why don't you look at each other as in conversation and have brief little exchange on whatever you want that you think is core that we have not yet discussed.
Well, I think one thing I do want to talk about is how we handle Wall Street, because we know that in September of 2008, right before President Obama won his office, we had Black Monday. We had Lehman Brothers call for bankruptcy, and President Obama really helped to lead the way to make sure that our nation's financial regulatory system is safe. He really put the first set of protections in since the 1930s. The reforms that he have put in place have really been to ensure that we don't crash the economy again, to make sure that taxpayers don't have to bail out the largest Wall Street banks. I don't think we should go back to the boom and bust economy that led to the loss of 9 million jobs in the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression.
So this back to the old policies is a great talking point, but the reality is what caused the collapse, the near collapse in 2008? It was mortgages given by local banks to people that were not qualified. It was sending those mortgages, bundling them through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to have Wall Street bundle them together and have the rating agencies give a AAA rating to 1,000 pieces of junk. And nothing has been changed in any of those dimensions.
We've now finished the 10 minutes. You look like you had one more sentence or so you wanted to add. I don't want to cut
that out. No, that's fine.
Okay.
That's fine. It's just that is not... Nothing has been done to correct the problems that caused the collapse in 2008.
You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. We are having a special debate on an appropriate topic for our show that centers on work, and that is who'd be better on jobs overall, President Obama or Governor Romney. And I'm privileged to have two fine debaters here. David Chu, who is a mayoral candidate and currently San Francisco supervisor. No, am I wrong?
That was last year, but I am president of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors.
President, thank you very much. I love to be corrected, indeed. Facts do matter. And Bill Bowen, who is a member of the San Francisco GOP Central Committee. And because we've been very good in staying on time, we have another 10 minutes or so. And so what I've done is I've been listening carefully to you during the free form part of the debate. And I have three questions that I'm going to ask. One that is a kind of a tough question for Bill, one is a tough question for David, and one is, I think, a neutral one. There is this whole question of offshoring, and every employer privately is saying we're planning to offshore ever more jobs. Many workers overseas can work for a lot less money. There's less worker protections. There's less chance of wrongful termination suits. It's a slam dunk. If we want to stay in business and compete in the global economy, we've got to offshore jobs more, and we're going to. What do you guys think the president, either President Obama would do and Governor Romney would do, to address the situation, if at all? Your thoughts.
So offshoring is not inevitable. If you listen to people like Meg Whitman. One of the issues is having the educated, trained workers here, where Governor Romney has been in favor of consolidating the 47 different federal agencies that do job training and doing block grants to the states and having the states work in conjunction with local companies to make sure that people have the skills that are needed. So it's developing the workforce that's needed here where we don't have that.
I want to ask you a follow-up question before I give David a chance. We already, America, as I said in the introduction, America spends either, depending on which survey you believe, number one or number two per capita in the world in education. Education is apple pie. Every political candidate from the left to the right sings the praise of education. But reality is, if we look historically over the last 50, 60 years, we keep spending more and more on education, and it is not job training programs, including President Obama's own, failed miserably. It cost $278,000 by his own per job created by his own economists. How can you put all your faith in the education boom when there is this enormous, also educated workforce worldwide? Is that really the answer? And then, David, I'll give you a shot, but I wanted Bill to get a response.
One aspect of that in Governor Romney's 59 plans is to staple a green card to a graduate degree in technical subjects for people from overseas. A greatly disproportionate amount of the success in Silicon Valley comes from people that are here from abroad, and then we educate them and send them away. So we would like to keep that here as an element of the education issue.
David, you talk about the offshoring issue.
Sure. I think it's an incredibly good contrast between Mr. Romney and President Obama. Mr. Romney has a record, literally, as a corporate leader of sending jobs overseas, both in the public and in the private sector. And in contrast, under President Obama has been completely focused on boosting our domestic manufacturing. In fact, 2010 was the first year that manufacturing jobs actually increased for the first time in more than a decade. He's been very focused on allowing entrepreneurs and manufacturers to bring inventions to market sooner. In fact, he signed patent legislation to allow that. And he's also been very focused on bringing community colleges together with manufacturing companies to really increase the number of trained workers. Let's take the situation of the U.S. auto industry. Mr. Romney thought that we should just give up on Detroit. And President Obama made a very risky political decision or politically risky decision to authorize emergency loans to rescue the auto industry. And today, we now know that GM and Chrysler are actually coming back. They're manufacturing more fuel-efficient cars. 1 million good jobs were saved because of what he did. And as far as exporting American jobs, again, President Obama helped to ensure that we're actually doubling our exports that are created by local Americans, and he created the National Export Initiative, which really put us on a path to doubling our exports in the next couple of years, a very different record than where Mr. Obama is.
Okay. I'm going to just make a personal comment. It has nothing to do with debate, but maybe useful for our listeners. It is my belief, I think, that it is unnecessarily jingoistic to try to do this America. I think we're pandering when we say American jobs first. I like to think that really circumspect citizens are world citizens. And that, in fact, if I create a job for a worker in Bangladesh who's living on a dollar a day, even if it costs an American his job, the net effect on the planet is probably a net plus. One guy's opinion having nothing to do with anything, but hopefully is a useful addition. Now, I kind of, in listening to your freeform discussion, I had one kind of tough question for each of you. Because, David, you brought up the GM thing, I'm going to ask the tough question for you. Bill mentioned, he says that that President Obama, like most Democrats, are much more interested in government, you can call it spending, call it government investments, but they're investing generally in that which the private sector has all rejected. They said even in the short and even the medium and long term, government companies say, will this investment in solar or wind or in a car company or whatever, is it likely to pay off? Well, some of the biggest investments that that you yourself have touted in alternative energy, most of the expert physicists say that solar and wind will always be a bit player in the energy solution. And in fact, the solar price stock index reached its high right after Obama got elected at $1,555 a share. It's now $72 a share. And in terms of GM, President Obama promised that when we bailed out with $60 billion of our tax money, that the GM would, and it was $34 a share, that the break-even point would be 53. How can he claim to be a success, really, if we have, and by all consumer report standards or whatever, GM makes inferior cars, we've not only bailed them out, but the stock price is 24 when the break-even point would have been 53. David.
Well, I think it's important to note that other countries that we are competing with when it comes to our jobs are making very specific decisions to assist in the industrial expansion of various industries that we have. And so at many levels, our American industries are at a competitive disadvantage because of those industrial policies that are being put into place by countries who have been gaining market share in a lot of different areas. I also think it's important to note that we, by virtue of decisions that we make, are making bets on different industries. So, for example, when we cut taxes for the wealthiest of Americans, when we cut taxes for certain industries and we create loopholes in our tax system, that is a decision on its own. And that is what failed Republican economic policies have been moving in recent years to regulate or to deregulate Wall Street is what led us to the problem that we're in right now. And one thing that, and with the greatest respect to Bill, who is representing Mr. Romney here, he was talking about what led us into this recession. And I think it's important to note that there was a Republican president who was at the helm of our country when we made these decisions to deregulate and to back off on policies that led us to where we are today.
Bill, I know you have much you want to say. I'm going to leave that to your closing statement, which I'm going to extend to 2 minutes each. But I do want to, in the interest of time, I'm now going to ask you what I think is a tough question for you. As David has pointed out, we really were in the pits of a deep potential recession, and it was extremely bold to make the decision, and it was unclear whether it was right, to do a lot of stimulus, to bail out banks, which is the last thing that by his normal politics he would want to do. He has created the job market has been improving, and jobs have been created. I think that, you know, to not acknowledge that he inherited a bad situation and has actually done quite a bit to improve things is not giving fair credits to President Obama. What's your reaction?
I think you need to go back a few years and recognize the difference. And it gets fogged over, but there's a difference between the TARP program, which is what led to the bank bailouts and saved the financial system, and the stimulus plan, which was a $800 billion grab bag of things that Congress approved that resulted in a lot of wasteful spending. So no argument with the TARP program, which was initiated under President Bush and by Hank Paulson, who was the Secretary of the Treasury at the time. It was implemented by President Obama and Geithner, who did a decent job with it. But the you need to separate the TARP program, which is what saved the banking system, from the stimulus plan, which was a big grab bag.
Okay. So now, what I'd like to do, I know you both, of course, we could go on forever, but what I've done is instead of, we were planning on a 90-second closing statement. What I'd like, we're going to do 2 minutes, and each of you We'll take 2 minutes, not to reiterate your opening statement. You've had a wonderful, in my mind, a wonderful clash of perspectives. I think nobody, anybody who is undecided is going to be clearer about who he or she is going to want to vote for in light of this fine debate. So, but I'd like you to contemplate what you've been discussing and take 2 minutes to what you think in light of the discussion, as well as your a priori views, what you think are the core reasons why you believe your candidate is likely in to be better on jobs. Because Bill started the opening statement first. David, 2 minutes.
So first of all, I do want to take a moment to talk about the economic stimulus that President Obama put into place a couple of years ago that have led us to 31 consecutive months of 5 million jobs that have been created. A couple of important aspects of that that have not yet been discussed is the fact that the president cut taxes for 95% of working Americans. He saved the typical working families hundreds of dollars, close to $1,000 over the last 2 years. And he also focused on small businesses. Right now, small businesses are creating jobs in our country. They're responsible for 2 out of 3 new jobs in the United States. President Obama signed 18 small business tax cuts. He reduced the tax burden on small businesses around the country. And that's very different from what Mr. Romney is proposing. Mr. Romney has a different vision. He wants to slash taxes for corporations and the wealthiest of Americans. He wants Wall Street to write their own rules. He wants to balance the budget on the backs of the business class instead of asking everyone to do their fair share. Mr. Obama, though, knows it's not just enough to recover from the last recession. We have to create an economy that's built to last. This is why he's cutting taxes that reward work. He's investing in education to prepare young people with the skills that they need. And he's boosting American manufacturing so that we can help outbuild the entire world. And that is why I'm proud and most of San Francisco is proud to support President Obama.
Thank you very much, David Chu. And you at the final word, 2 minutes to make your closing statement, Bill Bowen, why you think Governor Romney would net be better on jobs.
So I think the question is, faced with this new normal, the stabilized at 23 million people underemployed, it cannot get better in the next 4 years with a second term of President Obama. Deficit spending cannot be increased. We're spending $1 trillion more now, which is really a moral issue that my generation is putting debt on our children and grandchildren at an unconscionable rate. We can't increase the stimulus effect of the Fed. They're lending money at below inflation rates. We will again have a Republican House of Representatives. I recognize that there's some local thought in San Francisco that that will not be true, but any national people, Charlie Cook, Stu Rothenberg, would say even if the Democrats take all the House seats that are toss-ups, the Republicans will still hold an advantage by 10. So if you think about the next administration of 4 more years, there's no Democratic budget, hadn't had a budget in years. There's no trade-offs, there's no desire to work across the aisle. Contrast to Mitt Romney when he was governor of Massachusetts. He had a Monday morning meeting with the legislators every Monday morning from both parties, closed a $3 billion budget deficit, created a bipartisan health care reform, and he passed a school scholarship program. He created a bipartisan group for selecting judges in Massachusetts that was blind as to partisan loyalty of the judges. So if you want somebody that's going to function in a bipartisan way to solve the bipartisan problems that the country has, there's really only one answer.
Well, there is only one answer, and that is to the question of whether you guys did a good job on this debate. And I want to thank both of you for doing that indeed. David Chu, the president, forgive me for my misstatement earlier when I introduced you, the president of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, thank you very much for your good work. And Bill Bowen, member of the San Francisco GOP Central Committee, thank you very much for your good work as well. I do think that no matter what, this is emblematic of the kind of discussions that should occur, and if occurred more often in the privacy of our homes, in bars, in schools, and in the public discourse, frankly, in some of the debates, I think the nation would be better for it. I thank you both for contributing mightily to it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marty.
Okay. And now, my dear listeners, I was toying with the idea of going to the phones and having you vote, but I really think in some ways it would be like gilding the lily. We have these two people did a very, very good job of explicating the issues. I'm going to turn the attention to what I normally do in the second half of the show. The first half of the show, as it often does and did today, focused at the 30,000-foot level. It's the macro issues, what's going to be for a better society. The second half of the show, as it often did, is at the more micro level, it's about you. It is about you and your work life, whether you are a Republican, a Green, a Democrat, a Libertarian, whatever. It is certainly, no one can say it's easy to get a good job and hold a good job in San Francisco or the larger Bay Area. My job is to make my little strong, little blow to try to help it make it easier for you to find career contentment. If you are unhappy with your work life, this is when we do what I call a 3-minute career makeover. I invite you to call in with whatever your problem, whether you're a clerk or you're a CEO, whether you're a government worker, a nonprofit worker, or a large company or small company employee, any kind of work-related problem. Entrepreneurs are welcome as well. If you need some career help, the price is right, zero, zippo, nada, for a 3-minute career makeover or a workover. The phone number, while the lines are available here on Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134, that's 415-841-4134. And while we're waiting for the calls to come in, I'm going to do what I normally do, which is to intersperse with some tips that are hopefully under the radar. You know, we all hear the same old crap, network, 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 and stuff like that, but you don't need to hear that. That is disrespectful of your time. So I'm going to try to dispel some myths, some conventional wisdom about job searching that I think are dead. Now I think I've had over 4,000 clients now, career counseling clients, that I know are more mythological than real. The notion is you need to foster long-term relationships in order to get a good job. Well, the more accurate advice is that it is actually by the time you will create that long-term relationship, you're going to be eating cat food and living on the streets of San Francisco. You can more quickly develop relationships that are deep enough that someone will actually go to bat for you and help you land a good job. Here's how. In the first few minutes of an interaction, whether it be at a wine and cheese thing, or it be with a fellow street person, or it be in a fellow classmate, or at a church, or at a Democratic or Republican committee that you're involved in, your goal should be to unearth a person's core hot button. I don't like the term, but it's most accurate. It's something that he or she cares deeply about. It's usually related to one or more of the following things: money, success, family, looks, or health. So let's say, for example, you meet somebody at some professional event, and I do encourage anybody who's in a field to go to their local chapter meetings of an event. It's a great networking opportunity. So you might start by saying you're in line for the coffee or the snacks. Sure is a big crowd. That's what I call an environmental comment, something that relates to the environment, something you're both sharing at the same time. And the person then says, yeah, sure is, or whatever. And you say, I'm Mary Johnson. I'm an accountant. Well, I was until last week. They laid us all off, and they sent the jobs to India. Notice what I did here. I was very quickly revealing of my need without appearing desperate. That sets the stage for developing a quick connection. So after she said that, well, tell me about you. Oh, I'm Sally Smith. I'm a marketing manager. But she says it in a flat tone, and that's part of how you create deep connection instantly. You listen not to the words. You listen to what's beneath the words. So you say in a tactful way, gee, you sound thrilled with that. And she gets a little defensive and says, oh, no, it's okay. It's just that with my 3 kids, my plate's pretty full. Aha! You find out that her children could be her hot button. You know that you get that from her animated voice. So you say, this is really important, you use an empathetic statement like, I can understand. How old are your kids? Asking questions is great. So she talks, you listen, you share parallel experiences, you show empathy. And then when you sense that she's feeling somewhat connected to you, make the ask. You then say, as I mentioned, Sally, I'm looking for my next accounting job. Might you know somebody I could speak with? If she knows someone, she is fairly likely to tell you, even though you just met. So that's one of the kind of myths that you need a long-term relationship before you can count on networking to work. Now, if you would like some career help, I'd like to give out the phone number again. Any kind of career help, either in landing a job, keeping a job, being more successfully self-employed, do you want to run your business idea by me? Any kind of career help, I'm happy to help. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco for what I call a 3-minute career makeover or workover, 415 841 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And to the phones. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hello? It's you. Are you there? Hello? Okay, let's go to the next line. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. No, we don't. Calls have gotten scared. So, great time for you to call. If you want a 3-minute career makeover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Some more kind of tips that are relevant, hopefully, to your career issues. The old advice is to rely on LinkedIn. And yes, LinkedIn is good, but also Twitter is a valuable thing that you should consider. Twitter, used wisely, can be a surprisingly helpful job search tool. Go and follow, you follow a dozen employers. That's, you're allowed to follow means you get to see all their tweets. Follow a dozen employers that you'd like to work for. And then occasionally retweet their tweets and make a smart or a kind comment when you can. And after a while, you kind of built up this little Twitter relationship. Send a message to one of them, a tweet. You can send what's called a direct message in Twitter to one or more of them. And you say something like, I have an idea I'd love to share with you. May I email it to you? You may or may not get a yes, but with very little effort, you have certainly upped your chances of contacting somebody who's a higher up in an employer you'd like to work for. Again, 415-841-4134 is the number for what? For a 3-minute career makeover or work over here on Work with Marty Nemco. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, is that me?
It is.
Okay. Hi, my name's Lynn.
Hi,
Lynn. I wanted to talk about an issue that people don't talk about very much.
Mm.
I have attained PTSD through a experience, late life experience.
Mm.
And it really affected my ability to deal with my employers, my supervisors at my last
job. What happened? What caused the PTSD, as you say, quote, late in life?
Very severe spousal abuse.
Okay.
And that's one of the issues is if I am criticized by a man, I can't do, who wants a response right away, I can't do the kind of taking the criticism and framing what I did in positive light and working toward a solution.
Have you done the obvious, which is to say, thank you very much, I appreciate that. I'd like to give that some thought. And then whether it be a minute or 2 minutes, go to the bathroom or say you'll get back to him in 2 minutes or, say I'll email you. Have you bought the time to take the deep breaths that you need to take so that you don't let your anger toward the male person cloud your objectivity in dealing with your boss?
Well, I will tell you, I didn't do it at the time. I lost that job, and I am now training in sort of a variation on my field.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't worked for a while,
mm-hmm.
and I've been, doing stuff to address this PTSD.
Okay, great. So how can I be of help to you? That's what I care about.
Well, that one thing that you said, that's something that we've talked about in therapy, so that was an idea. But I'm planning on going into a corporate position,
mm-hmm.
and I'm unemployed, and now I'm going into classes for a little bit more of a hierarchical position, and that's been okay. And then I'm going to be doing some, like you say, career networking sorts of things.
If there was the goddess, the great goddess, and goddess was looking down upon you, what would the goddess say would be the work that you would be really most qualified to do that a corporate employer would be delighted to hire you?
Right now, I think medical science liaison.
Okay, it's community, a liaison between whom and whom? The techies and the salespeople, that kind of thing?
No, between like physicians and basic science researchers in medical fields.
Great. And would you be doing this primarily in writing, verbally, or both?
Verbally.
Okay.
Meeting a lot of people.
One-on-one. So, in other words, working one-on-one, doing work, explaining a new product or whatever to the physicians. Is like that a new medical device? Is that what you're saying?
That, and then also giving lots of talks.
Okay,
stuff.
Great. And so what I would invite you to do, I want to give you a little nugget to take away. In addition to working on the fact that you don't need to react instantly when somebody criticizes you, we all, whether we have PTSD or not, none of us like to be criticized, including me. We know it may be good for us and it may be right, but it isn't easy. So in addition to the idea of, you know, yes, working on trying to take deep breaths and escape from the situation when you're being criticized to take time to think about it, what you might want to do in this tough job market, one of the keys to getting hired for something where you're going to be public like that is to show them a sample. I would invite you to make a little video, whether it be on your webcam or even if you have to hire a student of one of the millions of film students at any of the San Francisco art colleges, to make a video of you explaining something technical one-on-one and to pretend you were giving a talk, a five-minute talk on some technical product to physicians. And when you and post that up on YouTube, which is available for the, you know, anybody can then see it. Then as you apply for jobs or otherwise network or even on your business card, you can have the link to the sample of that little talk, and that will help you get hired. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
Okay. I'm going to quit while I'm ahead. We have all our lines lighted up now, so I want to thank you for the
can
call.
Can I just ask you one more thing?
Yes, you may.
How can I gauge whether I'm ready or to return to the workforce?
It's a lovely question. Ooh, I'm glad you asked that question. Okay. Of course, it's a gray area. This is no black and white. I was more sure in answering your other question. But here's what I would do. I would, you know, very often if you spend too much time, after you've fallen off the bicycle, if you take too long to get back on, there is a risk that you're going to be so terrified you're more likely to fall off the bike again. What I would encourage you to do is to use what is called desensitization. I would try to start not by looking for some big corporate job. That's a very demanding job. There must be some, and I guess given your experience with this man, you're probably more comfortable with a woman. Find the woman you're most comfortable with in the world and role play the situations. Do a little talk with her about your medical liaisoning work. Have her pretend to criticize you and you react. Do it in comfortable situations. And then little by little, like maybe after she gives you a gentle confrontation the first time. And then if you're able to handle that, let her be a little more confrontive or, you know, hitting you with your negative hot buttons more. And then instead of going for a corporate job next, go for some little, simple, part-time job you could do in your sleep, even if it's Walmart greeter, because there's going to be somebody, whether it be a customer or your boss, is going to confront you about something. Do it in little baby steps, and I think then you will know, you'll have a better idea of whether you're likely to, when you're likely to be ready for that corporate job to which you aspire. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks so much for calling, and thanks for making sure I answered your follow-up question. It was a great question, Lynn, and I certainly wish you the best of luck and fair-minded treatment from both men and women.
Thanks.
Okay, take care. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hello, it's
Hello?
You. Hi.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, perfectly.
I used to be a teacher for almost 3 years. And then I didn't make it. My principal didn't recommend me to continue. Mm-hmm. And so I've found jobs that are low-paying right now that I don't enjoy very much. And I was wondering if you had any ideas. I couldn't get substitute work either in that same area because of not succeeding as
sure.
a teacher.
Absolutely. Well, let's. I'm delighted you're the classic three-minute career makeover caller, and I'm happy to help you. So let's start out with strengths and weaknesses and interests and stuff. So let me ask you a couple of questions I want some just short answers to. If there was the God, and the God were looking down on you, what would God say is the reason you were not successful as a teacher?
Honestly, I really don't know the answer to that.
Charisma, intelligence, preparedness, unable to attract the respect of students, overwhelmed with paperwork. Any of those resonate?
No, none of those really would be the answer.
Okay. Now let's go another direction. If the God were looking down on you and the God would say, what is the strongest... What's your first name, by the way?
John.
John. What would the God say John's greatest gift is?
Very intelligent.
Good. And if I gave you $1 million and you could either invest it in a company or donate it to a charity, what specific company or charity would you donate it to?
Probably an educational one. I really liked education.
Okay, great. And would you rather donate it, if you could give the money to a government agency that deals with education, a nonprofit or a company, which would it be, do you know?
Probably a nonprofit.
Okay. And if it was, would it focus on a particular niche within education? It could be at the bottom end. It could be literacy. It could be gifted. It could be preschoolers. It could be college students. It could be adults. It could be the handicapped. It could be future scholars. It could be by gender. What niche within education would you focus your efforts on?
Probably elementary.
Elementary. And would it be elementary... would it be to enrich the lives of the, quote, the least among us, or would it be for the gifted or free, or across the board?
Across the board, it would have to do with literacy and language, probably.
Okay. And literacy and language, if it's across the board, what's needed then, you know, if I said, I'm going to give you two choices, now we're going to play what I call the optometry game. In the optometry game, you go to the eye doctor and he asks you whether it's better with lens A or lens B. So I'm going to give you two different options within improving literacy and literature for the elementary, and you tell me which you like better. Number one, a nonprofit that is trying to bring technology to the schools so that all kids at all, it's easier for teachers to individualize reading and literature instruction. Would be that, or would it be providing mentors for more tutors for kids in the elementary school?
Probably tutors.
Okay. And would it be, now let's create a John meter, and the John meter goes from 0 to 10, with 0 means the idea makes you puke, and 10 means it gives you an orgasm. The idea of working for a nonprofit that focuses on increasing the number of tutors available to elementary school kids, what does that score on the meter?
8.
What keeps it from being a 10?
I just arbitrarily went there because just that's what it felt like intuitively.
Okay, let's take a moment to think about it. What keeps it from being a 10?
Honestly, I don't know.
Okay. And so if I said that I am the executive director of a nonprofit who specializes in tutoring kids, getting better tutoring for kids, and I say, John, I'll give you any job as you want as long as it's your highest and best use of your skills, limitations, values, etc., do you know what job you'd want to do for me?
Yeah, I would, probably check out mentors, see how they're doing, and do mentoring myself.
Okay. So you'd be kind of a field operative, an evaluator, a support system, an evaluator for such a nonprofit. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So what if I said that after we get off the phone, your homework is to go to simply Google on the term Bay Area nonprofits. There's going to be master lists of them. You'll find databases with a master list. Look for the ones that are most likely to have tutoring at least as a part of their mission. And then you are to draft a lovely letter, since you obviously care about literature and as such, you probably write pretty well and you're intelligent. So why don't you you'd write a letter to the executive directors of each of those on-target nonprofits, explaining that while you were a teacher, you realized what you really were meant to do would be to work for a nonprofit, perhaps in enhancing the likelihood of enhancing the quality of mentors and tutors in the schools. How do you feel about that as a homework assignment?
Good idea.
Okay. I thank you very much for calling Work with Marty Nemco. Okay. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, Marty.
Hi.
Thanks for a great program. I try never to miss you.
Thank you very much.
But, last year, I, in addition to my day job, I really put some effort into my hobby, which is sculpture, and I did get a commission, which paid me $7,500.
Congratulations. Well, tell me about the sculpture.
After taxes, I paid my taxes, so I believe in that. And I've also set up my hobby as a small business, so the government is quite generous to me. And I have no complaint, unlike a lot of people, about taxes. But my sculpture was a slightly larger than life-size Plains Indian warrior, which was not patronizing, not the junk you might see at a ordinary kind of outlet. But,
what made it different? I mean, we normally think of the Indian warrior. We hear him, we see him in his headdress or with his tomahawk or whatever, or standing there looking very bold and, you know, very respectful, like looking upward a little bit like President Obama looks. What did you do to make your sculpture of this Plains Indian warrior or whatever? What did you do?
In order not to make it like that, I went for accuracy. I did a lot of research, and the costume and everything concerning was as specific and accurate as I could get it.
But the facial expression and his physicality can send so many different messages. How did you make a choice of what expression he was going to have on his face and how you were going to have him physically standing or sitting or whatever?
Well, I went for dignity, but without the Hollywood overblown approach.
Okay. Anyway, okay. That was just my curiosity. I can't help it. There is an artistic side of me. So
I know there is.
Yeah. Thank you.
The client was very satisfied, but here's my problem, Marty. Yeah. I have a day job that's going to get me by. Right. You know, if I do well in the job, I'll get by. But I don't. I want to do this thing full. But here's the thing.
You're cutting out. I didn't hear it. Please go back and say what you just the last sentence again, please.
I'm sorry?
You can just cut out on the cell phone. So go back one sentence and say what you said again.
I'd like to do my sculpture work full time.
Right.
But I can't spend all my time trying to find clients.
Right.
And I've got stuff online which has actually come to me because my work, and they put my stuff on their sites, but it hasn't brought me any business.
Right. What I would do is I would hire somebody to be your business person, someone who's going to write grant proposals to the different, you know, unfortunately, especially in a tough economy, a commission-based sculpture will only go to somebody who's famous. So some rich person is not going to hire you. There's enough famous sculptors to hire. I would focus much more, and I am absolutely confident that President Obama, despite the recent polls, will get reelected. And I think we will see more, depending on when you want to use the term, stimulus, spending, whatever, on things like the National Endowment for the Arts. And I think both locally and federally, that's where most of the money is going to be, in my judgment. And because you don't want to be spending your time writing all these proposals unless you do, I would hire somebody to be your business manager who essentially writes them, or you write those proposals. What do you think about that?
Well, that was my thought, too. And that's why I called you, because I want to know your opinion about how you would go about searching for the right person.
Great question. As a career counselor, who's seen so many people try to get jobs, and they put on so many shenanigans, and they will lie and deceive or whatever. So I really believe in starting with the people you know and building out from there, and saying you're looking for an outstanding, ethical, low maintenance person who is grant writing experience. Or in addition to that, I would also go to a grant writing website, maybe somebody who teaches grant writing, because they've been somewhat vetted. I'm looking at the clock. I've got to say goodbye, but I think those are my two best suggestions, and I wish you, of course, all the best of luck.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. And that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do more 3-minute career makeovers, workovers on callers, and I'll talk with the New York Times' About.com columnist Wendy Connick about careers in sales for 2013 and beyond. What are the trends? Plus, we are going to discuss how to be an effective salesperson while also being an ethical salesperson. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we do find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.